Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
See these guys live. Oh, they're coming to town.
With a couple other guests, right?
Motley Crue, Joan Jett, and Def Leppard. Can't wait.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. We got third row tickets. My sister's taking me. I love my sister. Well, good morning, everybody. How's all y'all doing out there? Hello, Delmarva. Hello, Lime City Radio. Happy Saturday to all of you guys in the house. It's a easy threesome, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Comfortable.
Comfortable threesome. Absolutely. The way we like it. How you doing this morning, partner?
Doing well.
That's
good. Happy to be here. Happy to be back.
That's right, because this is your Weekly Dose podcast.
Thank you for joining us today as we're streaming live to you from Orange County, California. If you are new to Your Weekly Dose, this program's simply about having fun. We talk about the past week and hopefully enlighten your day with a little bit of laughter.
That's right, laughing at all things that we experience in everyday life. The embarrassments, the silly things, the awkward things, even the things that we're afraid of talking about. But damn it, we still do on this show.
That's right, the things that connect us all make us human. And they say laughter is the best medicine.
To all of our listeners, old and new, we always love it when you guys are a part of the show. Just enjoying the conversation. You can do that several ways. Comment on each of our episodes on our website, yourweeklydose.com.
Or send us a message through Twitter or Instagram at yourweeklydose1.
Say hello to us on Facebook at yourweeklydose.
Or if you want to send us a personal message, love notes, hate mail, you can email us at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com.
Absolutely. We got a pretty cool show for you guys today. It's going to be all over the place today. We'll be talking about the passing of Tony Dow, Paul Sorvino. Will Smith sent us a message. We'll be talking about who won the lottery. We got what's news, maybe the Tinseltown Spotlight, and of course, our friend, our buddy, our pal, Paul Preston from the Movie Guys.
It wasn't us that won the lottery because we're here today. But you can always download past shows for free from our website, yourweeklydose.com. Or if you're on the go, iTunes, iHeartRadio, or Spotify, just search for Your Weekly Dose. And please tell the world what you think of us. So rate and review the show.
Absolutely. Of course, today's theme song is Fallen Angel by Poison because you know what? It is National Lipstick Day. What better band than Poison because their first album, they wore a lot of makeup.
They used makeup in their time.
They wore a lot of lipstick.
Do they still wear it now?
No, they don't.
They don't.
They don't.
Like Kiss kind of took off the makeup.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of did that too on the second album.
Yeah.
So they kind of got rid of it right away,
gotcha.
Which was good. So, but anyway, yeah. So that's the reason why we're playing Fallen Angel. And, of course, all the songs that we play here, you can always go to our main sponsor, which is Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and shop to your heart's delight. You can download and buy all the things you want to buy there, movies, music, any trinkets or whatever. You guys have been to Amazon. You know what's there. Go and get it. You know, just go through our website and use it. Simple as that. So easy peasy.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. And have you ever seen Poison in concert, though? Or?
No. No. Dude. I think I've seen a Poison cover band, which was not not the same.
Okay, in all seriousness, I was coming across a couple of different things on the news feeds, and they say that out of the bands right now that are touring, you know, Joan Jett, Poison, Motley Crue, and Def Leppard, Poison is blowing everybody out of the water.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's a good lineup, too.
That's a great lineup.
You know,
and I think part of it, too, is, I mean, I know the guys in Def Leppard are all in shape. You know, I mean, you look at Phil Collins, the guitarist. That mofo, I mean, he's in his, what, 60s now? He still has, you know, the six-pack or 12-pack or whatever, and he does nothing but yoga.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he actually lives here in Laguna Beach, I think, or Laguna Niguel, somewhere in there. And then everybody else pretty much is in shape. I think they're just older, so it's a little bit harder, you know. So they don't move like they moved in their 20s and 30s.
Right.
But where Brett Michaels is still in shape also, you know, and he still has his six-pack thing going on, too. But he's all over the place. He's all over the stage and everything. You know, it's like if it hasn't changed.
I believe I saw him recently in one of the Sharknado sequels where Brett Michaels has a cameo before a shark gets him.
Yeah, so,
he looked good. He looked the same.
Yeah, he hasn't changed.
And it was that Guns N' Roses tour where I think on the first night, Axl Rose like broke his foot being on stage or something, and then he had to perform from a throne for the rest of the tour.
Well, you know who gave him that throne, don't you?
No, I don't.
Dave Grohl.
Oh, really?
Because Dave broke his foot like the year before or something or whatever, because he jumped off the stage. He tripped or whatever and fell off the stage and broke his foot.
Yeah.
And so Dave had to sit in the chair
for
the rest of the show.
Wow.
And there's an EMT guy who was holding it together so Dave could finish singing. And then Dave had a throne made or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that way he could rest or whatever and what have you during the show. So they didn't have to cancel anything. And so when Axl broke his foot, Dave gave him the throne or whatever to use.
Cool.
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah. I saw because I was at Coachella when Guns N' Roses was there.
How were they?
It was boring.
Was it really?
No, he was just sitting on a chair the whole time.
Oh, wow. Well. And everybody else just kind of stood there also.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the sad thing, I think, as acts get older. You know, they don't move as much. I mean, some of them still sound good, but they don't move like they used
to. Yeah, yeah.
You know? And that's the hard part, you know, because you're going, I can't move like that either, you know.
I don't want to pay $100 to go watch myself on stage.
Exactly.
Moving around slowly.
Yeah. But no, there has been a couple of reviews that have been coming out of the Midwest, or you know, certain articles, whatever, that Poison is kind of blowing everybody out of the water, and that they're the best act to see right now.
That's cool.
And that, what was it? Everybody, I guess Brett got sick in Nashville, so Poison wasn't able to perform, and they said without Poison there, all the other acts just seemed mediocre.
Really?
Yeah. And they said it was a real disappointment. But I know Poison said they're going to come back to Nashville later on to make up for that lost date.
Because
Brett, I don't know, not many people know, but Brett Michaels has childhood diabetes. Mm-hmm. And so he's been diabetic all his life, since the age of 6, I think. And so he has to take insulin every day.
Okay.
And so everybody thought at certain points when there's been certain things where he's had to go to the hospital for whatever, you know, they thought, oh, well, he's a drug user because we saw him shooting up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, he was shooting insulin is what it is.
Right.
You know, and so he goes into what's called insulin shock.
Yeah.
Which is very dangerous.
No, yeah.
And so something like that just happened recently also where that happened. He had to go to the hospital, spend a couple of days there, but he's okay now.
I feel like that's a promotional opportunity for him. He could be like a spokesman for awareness of diabetes or something. Does he do
that? Yeah, he has his own charity. Cool. He has his own charity for it and everything for childhood diabetes.
Good.
Yeah, at this point, he's probably got that implant on the back of your arm.
Oh.
I don't know if he does. I don't know. I mean, as far as I know, he's still...
I'd be so surprised.
He still, you know, shoots himself every day.
Like, nice and convenient at this point.
Could be. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's something that he's looked into or not. But, I mean, I know he's just so used to it, you know, kind of thing, which is why that mofo is ripped the way he is. And You know, he's in his late 50s, early 60s, too.
Taking care of himself. He
yeah,
has to.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, he did all the things that everybody, every rocker does or whatever, you know, but, you know, he's always had to be careful because of the insulin, you know.
Didn't he do Rock of Love or whatever that yeah. show was?
Which broke him into a whole new generation of people and everything. It really did. Because after he did, like, what, 3 seasons of that, and then he did Pimp My RV.
He did?
Yeah. Yeah, and then he did another one.
I had no
another
idea.
Reality. He did like 5 reality shows. So, and that just exposed him to a whole new generation and everything. And then he also won with the show that the Head Cheeto hosted. What was the show that
you're talking about? The Apprentice?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, he was one of the...
And he won.
Oh, the Celebrity Apprentice or whatever.
He won.
That was amazing.
And
yeah.
The final thing for that one was that the last two people had to work with Snapple and come up with their own drink.
Mm-hmm.
And so Brett came up with a diet version of it. It's called Tropa Raca. And the thing is that he also wanted me to make it available for people with diabetes that they could drink it.
Okay.
And so it won, and it's actually one of their most popular drinks now. So if you could find it, pick it up. It's actually really good.
Oh.
You know, and we picked it up because we're Bret Michaels fans.
As
you can see with our picture up there.
Yeah.
But thing is that I mean, it tasted really good.
Oh, wow.
You know, it wasn't like, you know, an awkward taste or whatever.
Right.
You know, and he was very particular on putting the flavors together himself and everything, and then making sure that the sugar count was low enough so that diabetics could drink
good.
It, which is why he made it a diet version.
Mm.
So, but he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. Yeah, we've gotten to meet him several times and everything, and really, really nice guy. Fun to hang out with, though.
Nice. And that's the kind of music that's great live, just a hard rock, heavy metal concert, like all those four.
Did you grow up
acts.
with the hairband stuff, or yeah. were you into it? Or?
I was probably equally into alternative and like hard rock, heavy metal.
Okay.
So I liked, basically, if it was rock, if they had guitars on stage, I liked it.
I was like a late bloomer with that.
Really?
Yeah, because I mean, when Poison first came out, I started playing the Hollywood Strip in 84, 85, and that's when Poison got signed.
Mm.
But, of course, they looked like girls because they wore the heavy makeup and everything and what have you. So, like, when one of their singles came out, I Won't Forget You, from the first album, came out, it was like hiding a Playboy magazine from my parents. Because I went up.
What is this?
I went up, I got the single, and I said, I really don't want my friends to know I listened to this. So I put it way in the back of all my 45s.
Oh.
You know.
Your dirty little secret.
Yeah, my dirty little secret. But then I would, you know, pull it out, play it, and listen to it, you know, and try and learn it, and play the drums on it and stuff and what have you. So
I was the youngest, so my older brother and sister couldn't have been more different. He was into Def Leppard, Poison, Motley Crue, and my sister was into Depeche Mode, A-ha, The Smiths, and
oh wow!
So I glommed onto both of those, you know, being the youngest, and so I liked all that. So
because my parents were pre-war babies, they grew up at the beginning of rock and roll.
Mm.
So anything that was more melodic to me, that's what I latched on.
Mm.
So, you know, with the top 40 at the time, yeah, I listened to Michael Jackson, Huey Lewis, you know, Paula Abdul when she came out or whatever. You know, all that early stuff in the 80s, too, I still enjoy to this day.
Yeah.
Same with you, like, you know, A-ha. But it's like, I didn't become like an A-ha fan or a Depeche Mode fan.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I liked certain songs, and that's where it stopped for me.
Sure.
Whereas with other bands, I'm going, oh, yeah, I want to get the whole catalog. Or I want to get, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Exactly.
I don't know.
What about you? What are you mainly into?
Now?
Or even back
or
then?
Or just, well, I grew up listening to like the Beatles and Grateful Dead and all that from my dad. And my mom, we grew up in a family where when my dad was in the car, it was my dad's radio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Made sense.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
Yeah. There was also a hierarchy on who got to sit in the front seat. It was always the oldest of person in the car.
Yeah, is that way your dad could turn to you, the oldest, and go, can you hit them for me?
Yeah.
Grab the wheel.
Hold the wheel,
I
hit them.
But I gravitated more towards like the Drifters and the Supremes, so I really liked.
Oh, really? Like, so like the old R&B then?
Yeah, I mean,
Motown.
I guess.
Oh, the old Motown. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the old Motown.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked a lot of that. I listened to a lot of that. I still do now, even.
Yes. I think from 1975 prior, is the old Motown for me. You know, that's all the good stuff right in there. Late, you know, from 65 to 75, I think.
Yeah.
That's all the really good stuff. Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can have dinner with you.
Yeah, oh yeah, I enjoy listening to a lot of that. And then as I got like older, I didn't really like listen to anything mainstream. My parents didn't let me watch MTV growing up, so I didn't really know about a lot of like musicians. Mm. My mom made me read this whole article on why Britney Spears was a bad role model. So then I liked Christina Aguilera because she was better. And then she came out with Dirty, and I wasn't allowed to like her anymore either.
My God.
So then I like Pink.
Yeah.
And then Pink then came out with Dirty. That song with like that was like You and Your Hand, and my mom was like, "No way, I know what that one means."
Wow. Were they hovering over you as you listened to these songs, like checking?
Yeah, jeez. I mean, my parents, they weren't really helicopter parents or anything of that nature, but my mom was a stay-at-home mom, so she was really taking us to and from and was very involved in our lives. It wasn't anything like she was, like, micromanaging where our influences were coming from or anything like that, but she just always knew what it was that we were talking about or what it was that the music was playing and stuff like that. And they were always friendly with our friends' parents. So it was always kind of very open between both of the parents, what was going on, the boundaries that were set were kind of just known. Like my good friends when I was growing up knew that my parents didn't want us watching MTV. So even if they didn't care, they didn't have it on when we were at the house.
Got it.
Like even if it was under their rules, they didn't care. Uh-huh. Or if there were like certain video games that my parents didn't want us to be able to play, even if they owned it, we weren't allowed to be able to play it.
My parents were kind of, my mom was kind of like that with certain cartoons.
I wasn't allowed to watch Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, I love
Ren. See, I wasn't allowed to watch Fat Albert.
My parents probably didn't even know what that
Seriously.
Was.
Wow.
Because they used the words dumb and stupid in
Really?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know.
That was the
I wasn't
why.
Allowed to watch like Beavis and Butthead. I wasn't allowed to watch like South Park growing up. So I lost a lot of those like, I don't know, cultural references from people a lot. Like I got them a little bit
See,
from
that
my
explains a lot on who you are now. That really explains an awful lot.
So I got him a little bit from my brother, you know, like the Who Killed Kenny. I could pick up on little things like that.
Uh-huh. Right.
But I never knew, like, I didn't know that South Park was just ripping on all of society for its entirety of its show.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I've got a love-hate with South Park, you know. I mean, there's certain things I crack up about it or whatever. Others I'm going, it's not that funny.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to watch, like, The Simpsons or, what was it, like, Family Guy and stuff like that.
Family
like,
Guy I'm not was allowed, so good.
Yeah, like growing up just wasn't allowed to watch any of those things. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've led a sheltered life.
A little bit growing up. I went to Catholic school till like eighth grade, and then I switched over into middle school, public middle school. And then after that, I told my parents that if I had to go to public school, I would drop out. So they found me another school. It was like a technical school, so you had to like apply, but it was still underneath like
you
the
and I have more
school.
In common than we know. Then I went to Catholic school too.
Oh yeah,
and that's where you learn everything.
Yeah, you kids are the worst in Catholic school.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
they're the meanest.
I've never been. I've public school all my life. So, yeah.
Well, to me, there's like an old joke, whatever, where these two boys go in, and they're going into confession, and so one of them, you know, goes in to see the priest, goes, you know, forgive me, Father, if I have sinned. And he goes, okay, son, what have you? He goes, well, you know, Father, just want to let you know that I've had premarital sex or whatever. He goes, well, was it with Angela Dubois? No, I can't say her name, Father. Well, was it with Mimi Capricci? No, Father. And the priest just names all these girls or whatever. And he goes, Father, I'm sorry, but I just can't tell you. You know, I just want the sanctity of the girl. You know, I don't want to embarrass her. Okay, well, say 15 Hail Marys or whatever, and to our fathers, whatever, and be done with it. He goes back to his buddy. He goes, what'd you find out? He goes, dude, I got 15 leads, man.
That one's actually pretty funny.
And truthful. You know? And very truthful. You know?
Yeah, I found that, like, the difference between public school and Catholic school is that the public school kids will fuck you up physically, but the Catholic school kids will fuck you up mentally.
Yikes.
To a degree, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like very manipulative.
Sinister kind of.
And if they're a nun, forget it. You're done. You're just history, man.
Now, were they slapping wrists?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
When I was younger, the older kids, I had heard stories about that. But then by the time I was coming up, that was just very much frowned upon. Yeah. There was no, like, no real hitting of students, no real touching really of the students when I was in Catholic school at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I even had one, God, what grade was it? See, second or third grade, maybe? Yeah, a teacher pulled me by my ears, you know, kind of a thing, you know, like the old, like, wow. Come here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, what have you. And my parents got pissed. And really? Like, because my parents didn't even do that.
Yeah.
You know, they hit me, but that was about, you know, but they wouldn't pull me by the, by the ears.
So had the teacher just hit him?
Yeah, it would have been okay, you know.
All right. Well, enough about our past. Let's catch on up.
All right. Look at her being a producer.
Yeah.
A good week, partner?
Yeah, good week. I'm excited to say that I've finished my first feature film with a couple of friends, and we are going into post-production, so we are going to start an online fundraiser to finish, because, boy, movies are not cheap.
I got a couple of quarters up there.
Yeah, I'll take them.
I got a stack of quarters. I think there's like $7 worth of quarters.
I'm going to go through your couch cushions on the way out, too. So. But yeah, just to pay for the final things, like the composer, the sound editing, all the finishing, color and all that. So I am going to plug that we're on a website called supportourstory.com/freelunch. Free Lunch is the name of the movie. It's a nice family comedy. So if you check it out at supportourstory.com/freelunch, you'll see me and the producers talking about the movie and see some clips and some behind the scenes.
I see some phenomenal false advertising in your future.
Yeah. Why do you say that?
It's going to be like private screenings where he's just offering free lunch.
Not just false advertising, but free.
Show up. Yeah. No, yeah. Well, he won't really have free lunch.
Yeah.
He'll be offering free lunch, and then you show up. It's a film called Free Lunch.
Yeah.
Did I lie, though?
Yeah.
You made an assumption.
Yeah.
All right. Now sit down and watch the movie.
It's kind of like Bare Naked Ladies, man. That is the best name for a band to get people to. Bare Naked Ladies tonight. You know.
That's
wow. People showed up. It was like, it's just four fat guys.
Right. Hey, it's band.
And they are amazing, aren't they?
They are. It's like, okay, I'll listen to them.
And they're thinking, why is it a bunch of guys at in our concert? Where are the women?
Yeah, exactly.
There's
exactly.
A couple women, but mostly guys.
A couple of fat guys together. You got, look like a girl. You know.
Nice. Well, you're the one, I think, that had an interesting week.
The more I was thinking about you, because, you know, when we do show prep every morning, you know, it's like, Sean, what did you do for the week? I'm like, oh, my God, what did I do, you know? And then now I'm thinking about it, I did a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was a busy week for me. Last week, I auditioned for another band playing guitar. Mm-hmm. The drummer of this band was the drummer for Redbone.
Okay.
If you guys are not too familiar, Redbone was a kind of a one-hit wonder band back in, 74, 75. They had the song called Come and Get Your Love.
Yeah.
And so the guy I'm working with, Reggie, toured with Redbone. So he's not an original member, but he toured with them and everything as a drummer. So he's putting his own thing together.
Cool.
And so I went in and auditioned and everything. He even wanted to hear some of my original music and stuff and asked, you know, hey, would you mind if we change it up a little bit or whatever so we could kind of make it our sound? Mm-hmm. And I said, sure, not at all, you know. And so we did, and some of it sounded a little bit different, and some of the guys liked it, you know. And so we were just kind of jammed, you know, for the afternoon and everything last Sunday. And it went really, really well.
Nice.
So, and so they're kind of now picking and choosing songs, whatever, that I can sing and play guitar with, too, and everything. So it was kind of cool. And Reggie and I, we were hitting, because we were talking about certain songs growing up and stuff, and he goes, oh, that'd be a great song to do. I'm like, really? You really want to do Muskrat Love? Really? He goes, dude, yeah. I'm like, all right, you know, okay, we could do it. You know, if America could do it, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
All right. And so it was just kind of like naming that song, whatever, and I was making Reggie very, very happy because I was pulling out, like, some of these yacht rock songs and everything, you know, like Summer Breeze, you know, and stuff and what have you. So we had a good time. We had a real good time. And then Thursday night, went to a taping of The Masked Singer.
Nice.
So I can't talk about who was there or what was revealed. I can't do any of that.
A big name, though?
Notorious? Let me think about this. Every season they kind of do something a little bit different for the competition. So apparently one of the singers, one from last week, got moved over to this week. Mm-hmm. And then they were taking on two new singers, but it was also double elimination. So whoever won then moved on for next week.
Okay.
So the big reveals, I can't say who they were, but everybody will be very surprised by them. Our generation especially will recognize them on who they are. And, we had a great time. And what was kind of cool is that my son's choir from Los Alamitos, we all went as a group, 44 of us and everything. So it was really cool. Different from the last time.
A lot of people.
Yeah, different from the last time we went because it was a much smaller crowd because COVID was still more in effect.
Mm-hmm.
And they had less seats. This time they had more seats on this and everything. Mm. What was really cool about the show, though, this I can talk about, is, of course, you know, Thicke is the...
Robin Thicke?
Robin Thicke is one of the judges for the show. Mm-hmm. Well, his dad, Alan Thicke, was on, obviously, the TV show called Growing Pains.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so this episode is TV-themed. And so at the opening of the show, Robin sings his dad's TV theme.
The theme song?
From Growing Pains.
Show Me That Smile Again?
Yeah.
Which
was
kind of
cool.
Which
is really cool. And he dressed kind of like the way his dad would dress, you know, for the show and stuff. So it was really cool. And then, of course, Alan Thicke did write a couple of theme songs. Like, he wrote Facts of Life, and the theme for Facts of Life. And there was another one he wrote, too. I forgot which one.
Oh, that's right.
But, yeah.
Thicke of the Night
start, and then after Thicke of the Night, then he got to do Growing Pains.
With Casey's favorite actor, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they jumped the shark, though.
Yeah, and they brought Leo on there.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a little bit of a busy week, you know, there. So, yeah, we had a good time and everything, and then, doing show prep for today, and then I had to meet a family, because a friend of mine just passed away recently. So I'm going to be doing my buddy's memoriam, his video memoriam. So I went yesterday to go pick up some pictures and everything. Mm. So it'll be nice to do that.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was a little bit of a busy week.
Yeah.
Which was kind of cool. So do we have Paul or not yet? Okay, no worries.
How was your week, Casey?
It was pretty busy, actually.
So
even last week I missed the show. I'd done 26 hours straight that day between Mateo's surgery the morning prior, and then I had a comedy show that night in LA, and then we had Nia's production that evening until like 6 or 8 in the morning.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you and I both. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you had to go all
the way. Yeah, I had to go the whole time, so that was fun. And then I got back, and Mateo was struggling with his nose, and so I had to get him taken in and make sure everything was looking at. He was kind of hemorrhaging a little bit, so they had to go in and just kind of restitch something up real quick, and so it wasn't like a big deal and it was an easy fix, but then after that I was dead and I was dead for life. I felt weird for like the whole next day.
I think that might be Paul.
I believe it is.
Sounds good. When we hear that phone ring, we know who it is.
I know.
Oh, if we hear that theme tune, we know exactly who it is. It's our friend, it's our buddy, it's our pal, the sexiest man in Burbank. That's right. Mr. Paul Preston.
Hello.
How are you, Paul?
Come and get your love. Come and get your love. How am I doing? Am I coming through okay? I'm trying something different because my phone took a crap on me and the speakers doesn't work so well. So I'm on those
you
icky
sound
headphones.
Lovely. You sound lovely.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Sexy from what I heard. That's
yes, you are, baby. How are you, Paul? How are you?
Damn decent. Thank
good.
You. Big weekend. Was in Comic-Con last week. This week I'm back.
You're so lucky.
I did a day.
I did a day. I had some work that kept me from doing more than one day, but it gets so damn busy. It's good to sometimes just do a day and then hit the bricks.
Yeah. But, well, I heard there's a lot of big reveals at Comic-Con.
First of all, you're thinking of Different Strokes. That's the theme Alan Thicke wrote.
Was the other one Different Strokes?
He did write the Different Strokes theme, and I'll tell you why.
And Facts
because
of Life, yeah.
For reasons unknown, the Different Strokes theme became a song we sang before every play we did in my college. We were going to go do a show. It's like, okay, we're about 5 minutes to curtain. Let's do Different Strokes. It became this tradition. The whole cast get together to start going, it don't matter that you got not a lot, so what? Do the whole thing, right?
Right.
Alan Thicke comes to do stand-up at our college, comes down, joins the song. I mean, that's like...
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was truly
That's
that
cool.
was great. Alan Thicke, legend.
That's cool. What was he like? Pretty down.
As charming and nice as you would imagine. Yeah, I mean, we didn't get too much time with him, but he's always like, hi, everybody. You know, it's not like he didn't have time for us. It's not like he was sequestered in his green room. You know, he was charming and walked around, and was cool.
I love to hear stories like that, you know, when you hope that that's how they are.
Right.
You know, so very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's good to know because I – don't know if I'd want to meet Kirk Cameron at this point, but
I have, and Alan Thicke sounds great.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. A lot going on there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, brother. Well, tell us, what was happening down at Comic-Con?
Well, if you're me, you're basically just excited about what's going on with Marvel. Now, Marvel is the Saturday Hall H presentation that holds like 6,000 people. But nowadays, you got to get in line like Thursday night to be to get a good seat on Saturday for all everything they release. Now, being there in person, I've done it once before. I got in line back in the days when you only had to get in line at 4:30 in the morning. You know that on Saturday, I did that once and sat through the full day of DC and Marvel panels, and it is a blast. You know, like Tom Hiddleston, this is the year he showed up dressed as Loki and did the whole presentation. You know, it was just insane. It was great. But no, not this year. This year I went on Thursday, so I missed all the Saturday presentation live. But of course, it all pops up on the online anyway. So here's what's coming. We are now in Marvel's multiverse saga. So that we've just had the Infinity Saga, now we're having the multiverse saga, and then we'll see what comes after that. But it's clear already with Ms. Marvel and Loki and Doctor Strange and WandaVision that we're, you know, giving the seeds of what could be a huge multiverse story, and now they're going to dive full into it, I think, going forward. So So here's what they announced. We had a new trailer for She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. That comes out August 17th. And do yourself a favor.
Say She-Hulk, Attorney at Law?
She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. Yes, I did.
Wow. That's the name of... Wow. Those.
Accidentes? Call She-Hulk. But the character who turns into She-Hulk, I don't know much about this character, but of course we'll go along with any and everything Marvel puts in front of me. But there's someone else who apparently gains Hulk powers somehow, and in the trailer you see what is now this sort of blended Banner Hulk character we saw in Endgame, introducing her to how to handle the powers and what to do with them and all that. So, but I guess she was a lawyer, so she tries to continue to be a lawyer, even though she'll occasionally Hulk out. And I think that's going to be a lot of the fun of the story. And, of course, at the very end of the trailer.
Cross-examinations are intense.
Yeah, they're super intense. Yeah.
Bad man, the witness.
Yeah. Your Honor, the attorney here is clearly throwing the witness through a bench. Yeah. But the 1-877 She-Hulk. You ever get a chance to call 1-877 She-Hulk? And it's like calling her attorney office.
Yeah.
And there's a recording that's pretty funny, so check that out.
All right.
And they had a new trailer. And at the end of this trailer, something I'm very excited about. They teased it with Spider-Man: No Way Home. A little glimpse again of Daredevil in outfit this time, not just Charlie Cox, playing Matt Murdock, but He's got the whole outfit going. A little tease. You don't see his face, but you're pretty sure it's him. He's got the sticks that he usually beats the crap out of people with. And what I love is that they're filtering Daredevil into a lot of the upcoming shows until finally he will get his own, which was also announced that Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio will be back in spring 2024. We got a year and a half wait, but Daredevil Born Again will come to Disney Plus with 18 episodes. And from what I've told, the Born Again comic series is one of the best storylines Daredevil has. So I'm very excited about that. But that Daredevil show on Netflix remains to me the best Marvel show.
I started to watch that. That was really good.
When Wilson Fisk showed up in Hawkeye, I was like, yes, 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 please embrace the Netflix Disney. Bring us more. And so, I think he'll even show up in an animated episode or animated show of Spider-Man Freshman Year, which is coming to Disney Plus. I think Charlie Cox is going to voice Daredevil for that too.
Oh, very cool.
So they have definitely leaned into Daredevil, and I couldn't be happier. This spring, we're going to get Secret Invasion, which will return Nick Fury to action, along with Talos, which was Ben Mendelsohn's character from Captain Marvel. And this is no doubt dealing with more intergalactic invasion of Earth that they have to somehow prevent. I think you're going to see Tenoya Paris, what was her character called, from WandaVision, join in on that well. And Colby Smulders showed up at Comic-Con to say she'll be returning as Maria Hill, the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. For that, the big trailer was Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. The thing about it was only shown in Hall H. It has not shown up online yet, but apparently MODOK appears, Yellowjacket returns, and Bill Murray's in it. So that's that's coming February 17th. And all those Ant-Man movies have been super entertaining, mainly because of Paul Rudd and the fun they just have with that. But now going full on Quantumania. I mean, who knows what the hell could happen there with the quantum verse and the multiverse all at work. It's they shoot high. God bless them, Marvel. They shoot high and they always stick the landing, so that's great. And speaking of Come and Get Your Love, Paul H. Also showed a trailer, only there, not online yet, of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is apparently the swan song for James Gunn with the franchise. Mm-hmm. But we'll have our final Guardians of the Galaxy. We got Adam Warlock. I don't know if you've seen Will Poulter, who's going to play Adam Warlock lately, but he's super buff now, ripped and ready to go.
Wow.
And Maria Bakalova, who played the young girl in Borat 2, got Oscar nominated, is going to play Cosmo. And if you've ever read Guardians of the Galaxy, Cosmo is a space dog. So that should be interesting. And in true Marvel fashion, a guy named Chukwudi Iwuji, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, is going to play a character called the High Evolutionary. And what I find interesting about this is every time Marvel comes out and just lays their giant dick down at Comic-Con and says, look what we're doing, DC also has to go, we're doing stuff too, you know? And because they always just copy and fail to reach the heights of Marvel. And it's funny that Chukwudi Iwuji was in Peacemaker, and now he's going over to Marvel to do some great stuff over there. Wow. So I look forward to him. The big thing that everybody saw at Hall H and online was the Black Panther Wakanda Forever trailer, which has all the feels. And shoots big again. They've brought in the Submariner, Namor. Mm-hmm. Looks like he goes to war with Wakanda.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, I mean, come on, Marvel, stop it. It's just, you're too showing good. Off at this point. It's too good. And then Echo from Hawkeye gets your own show in summer. Loki season 2 will be coming. We're rebooting Blade with Mahershala Ali, which is outstanding casting. That'll come a year from November. And all this leading to Avengers, the Kang Dynasty. You met Kang at the end of Loki. He's going to have a lot to do with shaking up the multiverse. Mm-hmm. That'll be May 2025. Later that year, November 7th, 2025, Avengers Secret Wars, which even the Russo brothers, who directed Infinity War and Endgame, said this shit is too big for us to direct. Like, the Secret Wars, apparently the Secret Wars comics are just massive storylines, and in between there is still, they bring us, you know, Sam Wilson's first Captain America movie. We get a Thunderbolts movie. The Fantastic Four will finally launch November 2024 under the MCU, and Agatha from WandaVision gets her own series. I mean, Marvel is just straight killing it. So,
and DC isn't doing shit.
DC's also making stuff.
Oh, okay.
Footnote.
Over on the also making stuff stage, DC had their panel. Actually, you know what? They did release a Shazam Fury of the Gods trailer, which you can see out there, and I thought it looked pretty good. You know, Helen Mirren's having a ton of fun in it, and it just looks like it's loose and fun like the first one, but the story might be more interesting to me. Like, I thought that the Shazam, even though it was charming, ended the way all DC movies do, and it just a messy conglomerate of CGI effects. I mean, even Wonder Woman, which was supposedly the good one. You know, Steve Trevor dies. Spoiler, sacrifices himself, huge emotional moment, but then, you know, she's got to fight the God of War and nobody cares. It's a bunch of noise, CGI noise, you know? And so if they can just calm down and have this be personal and, you know, even Doctor Strange, remember the first Doctor Strange movie? How did he beat Dormammu? It just annoyed him. I've come to bargain. Oh, enough! You know, and then he has to, like, they don't have to have a huge CGI spectacle sometimes. So, anyway, I'm hoping for good things from that. Black Adam, they have a new trailer for The Rock's venture into superhero movies, which looks okay. The thing that makes The Rock isn't in Black Adam. Charm, humor, like all that stuff. He's like a dark killer, anti-hero kind of. I'm like, well, that's no fun. The Rock, I mean, if you ever saw The Rock grab a mic and electrify 30,000 people in the stadium, you know, he was just the best. And so I would hate to see them drain his personality dark character.
For me, that's one thing that's interesting, is because it's out of the norm for him doing these big, heavy action films. He's always the good guy, or always this, or always that, you know. So to see him play a bad guy, you know, it's, am I going, okay, let's see if he can stretch. I mean, he played the Tooth Fairy, which is great.
That he did.
You know, and everything, and it worked, you know, but can he do Black Adam? You know, so I think it's going to be a little bit interesting overall, you know, for that.
Yeah, well, he probably can, but I will be sad that the best parts of Dwayne Johnson that you see in, like, a Jumanji or The Rundown or, you know, as in the Fast and Furious franchise will
right.
be
yeah.
on the sideline. So, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, someone will.
Yeah, and if I don't. And correct me if I'm wrong, Paul. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but I saw something to where I guess Ben Affleck is going to be returning as Batman.
I just read that yesterday. That apparently he's going to show up in Aquaman 2. Right when you think he's done with it, he's not. I mean, the chances are it won't be anything more than a cameo. But I mean, DC. I mean, that's the thing. They want Daredevil in the movies. They bring the Daredevil from TV into the movies. They want, you know, a TV show about Wanda, they bring the Wanda from the movies into the TV show. It's all mixed. Like right now, we're all dealing with Ezra Miller as this hot mess of a Flash. When they have a perfectly good Flash on TV that everybody loves, and Grant Gustin that they're just not using in the movie. It's like, well, what's wrong with you people? We got like 10 Batman. We got Michael Keaton returning as Batman. We got Pattinson. Ben Affleck. Just streamline all this stuff. Just copy Marvel. You know, it's like I tell Universal Studios, copy Disney. Just copy Marvel.
Right.
But then again, you watch the Black Adam trailer and it looks like there's spaceships from Wakanda and Jatari and all this other stuff from Marvel in it. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell DC. But chances are I'll see everything, but I won't be as excited as I am about this freaking multiverse saga. That's going to kick ass all over the place.
Yeah. I agree. And real quick, Paul, give us a little bit on what movies we should be going to go see right now.
Well, I don't think I need to tell you to see Nope. That was number one at the box office last weekend. I'd be curious to see if it repeats this week. We'll see. But everything that Jordan Peele does seems to find an audience, because he takes grand concepts but makes them kind of hip and relevant and, you know, socially interesting. So this one's no different. You know, there's something in the sky above a horse ranch in Agua Dulce, California, and it's been dumping keys and other things from its victims back to the earth, and dumps blood on the earth. And so the people who run this horse ranch out there, who've been providing horses for Hollywood movies for years, a black family, has to find out what this is in the sky. And they're also hoping to be the first people to capture something like this on camera. Now, Peele, somehow, even if you just said the guy from Key and Peele is directing movies, but take that aside, just he's such a good director. It's shocking. You know, he's simply one of the best directors in Hollywood because so many people out there can just tell a story, but Peele has this knack for involving every aspect of filmmaking in the storytelling. We won an Oscar for script, but his imagery, his metaphors and all that stuff, top notch, and nothing is an accident. And here's another story he's created that is something you've never seen before, like Get Out and like Us. Mm. And even as a producer, he's done great stuff like that. He produced the Candyman reboot. I thought was real dark and real good. And there's a whole sequence with a sitcom called Gordy's Home with this chimpanzee that it's not just backstory. It's about man's meddling with nature, and you need to see it to believe it. It's really good. Wow. And of course, you have Daniel Kaluuya, hot off the Oscar. He plays a character here that's 180 degrees from the previous, reminding you what a great actor he is. Brandon Perea is the great comic relief. Michael Wincott, if you've been following Michael Wincott for the years, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Talk Radio, he's been like a crazy character actor in so much stuff. I feel like I haven't seen him in a long time. Great to see him back on the screen as well. This is a top-notch entertainment and also a really good film. Like, he's done, again, straddled the line between, oh, this could have come out at Oscar time, or this could come out as big-time summer entertainment. Okay. It achieves both.
Awesome. Before we go, Paul, one question for you. Are you familiar, what's that museum again that we're talking about?
Oh, the Western Film Museum out there in Lone Pine.
Are you familiar with that?
I went for the first time last year.
Okay.
Yeah, during the pandemic, as soon as it opened, I went and checked it out. Yeah, it was really cool.
We're thinking about going up there probably when it gets a little bit cooler and checking it out and doing a live broadcast from there on a Saturday. Would you want to go with us?
Hell yes.
Okay. We're definitely going to be making a road trip out of it. We've already talked to the director of it, Lizzie. And so
awesome.
We're going to definitely try and get up there when it gets a little bit cooler and everything. So, yeah, we want to make sure that we include you on that as well.
Please do. I hope schedules will work out. That 395 drive also is just filled with great. You got Mount Whitney. Is it Mount Whitney? That's right there. Yeah, the largest peak in the state. And then... yeah, Manzanar is out there. There's a lot to see on that 395. It's a great ride.
Yeah, we figure we're probably going to go out on a Friday night or whatever, spend the night over,
yeah.
You know, and then do the show Saturday morning or whatever, and then kind of spend the day there and then come back. So
that'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right, brother. Thank you so much, man. It's always good to hear your voice. I miss hearing your voice. It's been too long, my friend.
You are welcome, and enjoy yourself, and go to the movies for the love of God. Just, you know, wear a mask. If you're feeling it, do it, but don't let that keep you from going, and be safe and have fun.
Will do, partner. Take care of yourself, too, buddy.
Farewell.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
It sounds like we're going to have a steady IV drip of Marvel content for, the foreseeable future. Just mainlining Marvel for...
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's one thing I think that, you know, Paul's right about. I mean, Marvel sat down. They did this big, whole, massive plan of how to do things. And if you look at the first, four or five films of each of the Avenger characters, you know, the ending of each one pointed towards the first Avengers film.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was the smartest thing to do.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit. And then... you know, Warner Brothers is sitting there with their thumbs up their butt, literally trying to figure out how to make everything work on their end with all these different superheroes that they own.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you've kind of, you know, redid the whole Batman trilogy kind of thing because, you know, Schumacher kind of screwed up the last two films to a degree. Okay, fine. And then now you've got this new one that just came out recently that's a standalone kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But they rushed to try and get Justice League done, you know, and now you're doing the first Wonder Woman film, which is a whole flashback movie.
Right.
You know, as opposed to doing what Marvel did, put out the movie and then at the end of it, then you connect it to, you know, the big reveal, you know, kind of a thing. And they're, you know, Warner Brothers is working backwards.
Yeah.
on the whole thing. They really are.
And everything's so drab to me. It's always very like dull or drab. There's not like life or energy in it. To me, it's just I don't know. It just doesn't stand out to me.
Well, I think part of it too is that you got to try and recapture each character's background. I mean, Superman is not Batman, and those two guys are not Wonder Woman. You know, Aquaman's completely different. You know, so you've got these different elements that you can really work with.
Yeah.
You know, and I think as far as the scenery, the background, you know, it works. I think some of the actors work as well. Yeah. You know, to create this new thing. But yeah, I think some of the scripts are a little weak overall is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, they're based on comic books, and I feel like they forget that. Like, Marvel keeps the fun of, like, the energy that kids have for comic books,
yes.
the love for it.
Yeah.
And DC's like, no, this is for adults.
Well, they're trying to bring certain elements in from the comics that are current right now, and comics has done a big change, you know? I mean, it's not what it was, let's say, even when we were kids, you know? And even from then, it's done a huge, massive change. Overall, I mean, good Lord, they even killed Robin, which was technically the second Robin in the comic books. And that's what got me into comics, because I didn't realize it. I was in college stopped by a comic book store with a buddy of mine, and I saw this new Robin outfit, and I'm like, oh, well, wow, they changed Robin's outfit. They go, oh, yeah, that's the new one, because they killed the last one. I'm like, what? They killed Dick Grayson. He goes, oh no! That's the first Robin. They killed the second Robin, and there's a second Robin. Yeah, because this one's a third. There's a third Robin. I had no idea, and that whole thing, it just got darker, is what it was.
Interesting.
Into where I think it's where I think Bob Kane originally wanted that character to be, you know, because I mean he is a creature of the night.
Yeah,
you know, and he's dark, he's broody, he's this, and you couldn't do that during some of the 50s and 60s because of the restrictions that they had on the comic books.
Sure, sure.
So, and now you can. So I think they're trying to reflect that in the current films.
And they kind of touch base on that, too. I mean, Batman is constantly touted as a vigilante and...
Well, they're all vigilantes. That's just it. That's what everybody forgets about.
Well, right, but no, but you don't forget about that with Batman.
They're constantly like...
Yeah, they're constantly checking that and like talking about how he shouldn't really be doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
And so I always feel like there was more of more grappling with the actual ethics of what these superheroes are doing. I prefer DC over Marvel.
There's two people that do.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think it's just because there's way more reality in DC than there is in Marvel. It is more derived out of people and and the nature of humans in DC, whereas Marvel is more of the magic and the fantasy.
Yes. I agree with you there. Absolutely,
I think it's a mentality of the individual too.
I think
that's drawn to one or the other.
Yeah, I totally agree because I mean, there's certain things aspects about DC that makes more sense to me. As far as the way the characters are developed versus Marvel going, oh, it's an accident.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an accident. Oh, it's an accident.
Oh, look at that! We hit a wall with our writing. Well, we'll just create a character that bends time.
Yeah. Oh, look, this guy got bit by a spider. Oh, it's an accident. Oh, look, we're going to send these four astronauts up into space, and, oh, a cosmic wave is going to happen. Oh, it's an accident. You know, that's what I got tired of with Marvel, you know. But as far as the way the Marvel movies are coming about, I mean, they're doing it right. They're totally doing it right. Where Warner Brothers, the only place that they're doing it right, and Paul will agree with me on this, is on the animation side.
Like
isn't that the multiverse?
That's Marvel. You're talking about DC animation.
I'm talking
animation.
About DC, the DC animation.
Yeah.
Because, they've put out some stories or movies, you know, animation-wise. I mean, they're now rated R.
Yeah.
So this is not, you know, your Saturday morning Scooby-Doo meets Batman kind of a thing. You know, I mean, they did the Killing Joke.
The Killing Joke, I had to turn off. I was watching with my sons going, let's watch some, and I think they dropped like an F-bomb or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's rated R.
Yeah.
It's rated R,
that's
you know.
The Killing Joke,
And I think Paul Dini, who is a part of that whole crew that came out of the Batman animation series,
yeah.
You know, on TV, they've been doing, I think, everything right, because they take the stories out of the comics and go, let's tell this story. Mm-hmm. And we're going to change a few things, though, here and there, but not to the point where it's really going to piss people off. And we're going to come up with it, but keep the original story intact as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And they've done a great job with that, with the whole thing. And also kind of connecting certain storylines together as those movies come out, which also will include not just Batman, but Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Teen Titans, and everything. And make it so you can watch one movie to the next, almost like the way you can watch Marvel. But that's only on the animation. If they could get those people to write for or direct for the live action, mm-hmm. I think Warner Brothers will do a hell of a lot better with the live action stuff.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. It's not my cup of tea, but that people prefer DC over Marvel. I think it's just depending on where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how you can relate to the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm broody, so I like Batman. All right. Well, what do we got going on? Oh, you know what? We've got some bad news. We've got some bad news going on. We've lost, speaking of acting and everything, kind of keeping on the topic, we lost two really good people in Hollywood.
Yeah.
The great Paul Sorvino and the legendary Tony Dow.
Yeah. I grew up with TBS reruns. If I wasn't watching the Braves play on TBS, I'd watch old whatever black and white reruns they'd play, and Leave It to Beaver was one of those ones. Mm-hmm. And it's still, like, it was black and white, it was old, but I liked it.
It still works for today to a certain
worked.
Degree.
You know, his kids getting in trouble, and two brothers, and mm-hmm. old Eddie Haskell down the street. You know, it was funny to me. And Tony Dow was always, he was kind of like the straight man to Beave, right? Yeah, he's the older, cool older brother.
Cool older brother. I think it's almost the same way David Nelson was to Rick Nelson on Ozzie and Harriet.
Yeah.
You know, where Rick kind of got all the cool, funny lines growing up as a young kid growing up or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, and his brother Dave kind of played the straight guy, overall. And same thing with Tony Dow. He played the straight guy. So, yeah, totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Paul Sorvino, of course, I mean, a great character actor, played a lot of gangster mm-hmm. type of characters. I mean, everything from The Firm.
The Firm?
He was in The Firm.
Okay.
Goodfellas.
I'm sure more. Yeah.
He did so many. I mean, you think gangster, you think Paul Sorvino.
Yeah.
And he played it right, other than Marlon Brando playing The Godfather.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I mean, he did a lot of them. Kind of a thing.
I think of him also, like, famously crying as his daughter won the Oscar. Mira won the Oscar for a Woody Allen movie, and he was there in the front row.
He could be more proud. You're proud dad. Proud dad, exactly.
Awesome moment.
Exactly. So definitely going to be missed. But I believe we do have some things on them from the news or anything like that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go ahead. Which one are we doing first?
Tony Dow.
Tony Dow.
Remembering Tony Dow, the Beaver's big brother. He was Wally Cleaver in Leave It to Beaver.
Wally, why are you putting that goop on your hair?
It's not goop. It's Groomwell for the fastidious man.
Tony Dow playing Big Brother Wally, the star athlete, the Boy Scout, in the 50s and 60s. Tonight, Dow's family saying the actor has died. He had shared his cancer diagnosis earlier this year. Born in California in 1945, thrust into stardom at just 12 years old. Wow. Learning he'd gotten the role of Wally over a hamburger. Dow growing up with Wally on TV, shaving for the first time.
What do you do that for?
Well, I don't know, but you're supposed to.
Getting his license. He would go on to star in other TV shows like Lassie in 1968. Tonight, his co-star Jerry Mathers, who played his brother Beaver, writing, "Tony was not only my brother on TV, but in many ways in life as well. Tony was always the kindest, most generous, gentle, loving, sincere, and humble man. And it was my honor and privilege to be able to share memories together with him for 65 years."
Wow.
So many fans remembering Wally actor Tony Dow. Good night.
You know, with Jerry Mathers too. I mean, every time he would make an appearance, you would always have to, I think 90% of the time you see Tony with
him.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, or if Tony was making an appearance, Jerry was there.
I seem to remember that they made movies like Leave It to Beaver movies. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that was a fad for a while to do like a reunion kind of special. And I remember seeing them kind of grown as adults with their families and yeah, always side by side.
Yeah. I mean, and they had a very good kinship, I think.
Yeah.
You know, to do something of that nature. You know, and to be friends 65 years later,
yeah.
You know, it's like, holy cow, you know.
Yeah.
But definitely icons, definitely
yeah.
icons.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, let's play the one about Paul.
I know, and I know he's, this one I actually like this guy. I grew up watching him on like Law and Order and stuff like that.
Oh, that's
so actually
that's
on
right.
the other
yeah,
side
yeah.
of the spectrum.
Yeah.
He played crooks and cops alike.
Hey, Paulie.
Paulie might have moved slow.
From Ray Paulie Liotta. Cicero in Goodfellas. Mm-hmm.
But it was only because Paulie didn't have to move for anybody.
She want to marry you? To NYPD Sergeant Phil Ceretta on Law & Order.
Yeah.
You do understand that you have the right to an attorney. You maintain you've passed on that right.
Tonight, the family of actor Paul Sorvino saying he has died of natural causes. He was 83. His wife, Dee Dee, by his side.
Mm.
Born in Brooklyn in 1939, Sorvino trained in theater, moving to film. His debut in Carl Reiner's Where's Papa in 1970.
Oh, what do you want?
It is more than 50 years in the industry. There were so many roles, playing Henry Kissinger and Oliver Stone's Nixon.
Oh, that's
well,
right.
As you know, most of my staff have weighed in against this incursion.
But it was his role in Goodfellas, perhaps most famous, improvising this moment with Ray Liotta, the filmmakers keeping it in.
I don't need that. Ain't gonna happen to me. You understand?
Uh-huh.
You know that you're only out early because I got you a job.
Yeah.
I don't need this heat. Understand that?
Uh-huh.
And you see anybody around with this, you're going to tell me, right?
Yeah.
That means anybody.
All right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And it was his daughter, actress Mira Sorvino, who thanked him during her Oscar acceptance speech in 1996.
When you give me this award, you honor my father, Paul Sorvino, who has taught me everything I know about acting. I love you very much, Dad.
Tonight, his daughter tweeting, "He was the most wonderful father. I love him so much. I'm sending you love in the stars, Dad. As you ascend."
Wow.
Ah, oh, that's so good.
Yeah. He had such a presence. Like, without even saying anything, without saying lines, you're just watching him. Your eyes are glued to him. He's so good.
Yeah. And, yeah. And I mean, even in The Firm, I mean, the scene was so simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So simple.
It was. It really was. Because you had Paul Sorvino in there, and the other actor who played Jelly in Analyze That. With Billy Crystal and Robert De Niro.
Oh, I don't remember him.
And Casey, can you see if you can pull that up real quick?
What was that?
It was a scene from The Firm.
Uh-huh.
And pull up Paul Sorvino, The Firm, and let's see if we can find that. But it was it's a very simplistic scene
mm-hmm.
where Tom Cruise already made copies of whatever of all the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Sorvino's character just kind of goes in and goes, "Oh, what's with the stealing of the..." He goes, "I haven't stolen them. They're exactly right where they're at." You know?
Yeah.
And it's just a nice, simple, then what the hell was going on? He goes, "Well, I'm your attorney. I need to know everything."
Mm.
And so that you know, I know everything, mm-hmm. you know? And he sets it up to where, you know, he's able to get himself off. From the mob.
The corrupt, yeah.
You know, and goes, "Hey, I can do anything, I can do everything," you know, kind of a thing, whatever. And it's such a really, really good scene, you know. And let's see, is this it?
All right.
Do we get it? Okay.
Oh,
it's okay.
I remember The Firm had a lot of good characters in there.
Yeah.
If I get my hands on this kid.
Excuse me.
Not now, Ruti.
I think it's urgent, Mr. Moralto.
Ruti thinks it's urgent. What do you think, Joey?
It's a Mr. McDear. Mr. Mitchell McDear. He's waiting to see you.
I think Ruti's right.
Oh, Jelly, another character actor. I didn't know his name.
Yeah.
He's got kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but he plays Jelly.
Yeah.
And
he's like the second man, the wingman mafioso.
Right. And it's the two of them, and they're great.
Tonight,
Tom Cruise walking up.
Mitch McTier. I'm your attorney. One of them, anyway. I assume you knew, but I thought I'd mention it in case.
Did you care to sit down?
Not really. I want to try and... This is very awkward. I'm afraid my firm has behaved in an unethical manner. It seems that we, Bendini, Lambert, and Locke, the entire firm has been engaged in a conspiracy. We've been overbilling our clients.
And so far, Servito hasn't said a word, but his presence, like you said, just the look. And it walks over, sits next to Jelly. I'm just going to call him Jelly.
In some cases, massive overbilling. I assure you, I had no idea any of this was going on when I joined the firm. Well, I feel I have to report this criminal behavior. But I can't use your invoices without your written authorization.
Our invoices?
Tony, please.
Got listen. Two words out.
Yes, sir. Your bills, you see, it's an important part of the proof that we've overbilled you.
That's it?
Pretty much. Well, most of our clients have already agreed. Well, pretty much all. Except for you. Which is why I'm here.
And this is what you've been talking to the FBI about?
You want us to let you turn our bills?
What we charged you. I should say overcharged you.
Over to the government?
Yes, sir.
Now, is that in any way?
No, sir. It does not in any way waive your rights to full and complete confidentiality in any other area of the attorney-client relationship. I'm your lawyer, gentlemen. Whether I like it or not, I can't talk to the government about you even when I'm no longer your lawyer. That would be breaking my word, my oath.
All right, Mitch. So what was this stealing of the files? What the fuck was this all about?
The files haven't been stolen. They are in exactly the same place they were. I just felt it was important for me to be thoroughly familiar with the precise makeup and whereabouts of all your holdings and activities. So I prepared copies of everything. That way you and I can communicate perfectly. And of course, if we ever have to talk to a third party, then I know everything. Right down to the penny, pound, franc, and Deutschmark. I know everything you know. As I should. As your attorney.
As your lawyer.
And what if the firm should desire at some point to terminate your employment?
Whatever I know, wherever I go, I am bound by the attorney-client privilege. I am very much like... I would say I am exactly like a ship carrying a cargo that will never reach any port. And as long as I'm alive, that ship will always be at sea, so to speak.
Yes, a fucking Arafat, huh? Never a night in the same place.
In any case, I need your written authorization so I can release your bills, like every other client is given.
Do you have this authorization with you?
I do.
There you go.
Nice scene.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and Paul's, he just...
Yeah.
Very few lines. I mean, that's all Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like his role in Goodfellas. He didn't have to talk much, but he said a lot, you know, with his presence.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's just it. It's his presence that brought him forward, I think, in a lot of those roles.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do a whole lot.
You know,
it's the subtleties.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, what shows a great actor also.
Yeah.
You know, it's those type of little things, mm-hmm. whatever. So
yeah,
if you get a chance to see it, guys, go see The Firm. It's, you know, rent it. It's really good.
Yeah,
it's a good film.
Yeah, yeah, one of the better Grisham film adaptations.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, but we're gonna miss both of them, Tony Dow and Paul Sorvino.
Yeah.
So, how much time do we've got left here? 11:11.
Make
okay.
a wish.
All right. Let's go ahead and kind of do this a little bit.
Let's take a dramatic Paul Sorvino pause.
Yeah. I wonder what his take would be on the slap heard around the world, you know?
Oh.
As a character act, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, he slapped him. He needed to be slapped. Okay. If you guys haven't seen it yet, this is really interesting. But Will Smith has now released a video apologizing for the slap.
At the Oscars.
After all this time. It's 3 months later, basically. You know, to me, it's a little too late kind of thing. But he does kind of answer questions that people put forward.
Oh, he took questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So can we go ahead and pull that up, please?
Yeah, of
Casey?
Course.
Which I was kind of surprised about because I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
From this video, yeah. whatever, but he actually took questions from the general public, whatever, on like why did you do this or why, you know, or whatever, and it's really interesting. So let's see what we've got.
So he's got a hat on and he's sitting in some kind of studio. It looks like
He's sitting at his house.
Yeah, a house or something.
And the video opens says, "It's been a minute. Over the last few months, I've been doing a lot of thinking and personal work. You asked for a lot of fair questions that I wanted to take some time to answer." So he's sitting down on a couch or whatever.
Yeah.
Probably somewhere in his
house.
On an
obvious set.
Why didn't you apologize to Chris in your acceptance speech? I was fogged out by that point.
Fogged out.
It's all fuzzy. I've reached out to Chris, and the message that came back is that he's not ready to talk, and when he is, he will reach out. So I will say to you, Chris, I apologize to you. My behavior was unacceptable, and I'm here whenever you're ready to talk.
In his sweatpants.
I want to apologize to Chris's mother. I saw an interview that Chris's mother did, and you know, that was one of the things about that moment. I just didn't realize, and you know, I wasn't thinking, but how many people got hurt in that moment. So I want to apologize to Chris's mother. I want to apologize to Chris's family, specifically Tony Rock. You know, we had a great relationship. You know, Tony Rock was my man. This is probably irreparable. I spent the last 3 months replaying and understanding the nuances and the complexities of what happened in that moment. And I'm not going to try to unpack all of that right now, but I can say to all of you, there is no part of me that thinks that was the right way to behave in that moment. There's no part of me that thinks that's the optimal way to handle a feeling of disrespect or insults. After Jada rolled her eyes, did she tell you to do something? No. It's like, you know, I made a choice on my own from my own experiences, from my history with Chris. Yeah. Jada had nothing to do with it. I'm sorry, babe. and say sorry to my kids and my family for the heat that I brought on all of us.
And the advertisement for the money that he's nominees. Making on this.
You know, this is a community. It's like I won because you voted for me. And it really breaks my heart
to
have stolen
and
tarnished your moment. I can still see Questlove's eyes. You know, it happened on Questlove's award. And, you know, it's like I'm sorry really isn't sufficient. What would you say to the people who looked up to you before the slap or people who expressed that you let them down? So there's two things. One, disappointing people is my central trauma. I hate when I let people down. So it hurts. It hurts me psychologically and emotionally to know I didn't live up to people's image and impression of me. And the work I'm trying to do is I am deeply remorseful. And I'm trying to be remorseful without being ashamed of myself, right? I'm human. And I made a mistake. And I'm trying not to think of myself as a piece of shit. So I would say to those people, I know it was confusing. I know it was shocking. But I promise you, I am deeply devoted and committed to putting light and love and joy into the world. And, you know, if you hang on, I promise we'll be able to be friends again.
What's your take, partner?
Wow. That's uncomfortable to watch. I don't know, you know, I never met him, probably never will, so I can't speak to him. You know, people make mistakes, and he apologized. That's all between him and those family members. But for his persona, I don't think he recovers from this. Like, he'll work, but I think he'll kind of go into, like, Mel Gibson kind of territory, where his projects kind of go in a different direction, not as high profile. Like, it's always going to be synonymous with his career now. Like, you know, forget the Oscars or Ali, you know, to me, it's the slap. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't just seeing the way other things trend, like that he'll just go into, like, I don't know, different kind of.
I know
of
a lot
projects.
Of his production stuff has taken a halt, you know, even the producer side of things, which makes me wonder because to be greedy in this aspect, I've been really enjoying the Cobra Kai
TV show,
and Will is one of the producers on it. You know, and so, you know, it makes me wonder with situations like that. You know, I think that one's a too big of a machine to stop.
Okay,
you know, because they're already in their fourth season,
and he hasn't been removed as producer.
I haven't seen it done yet.
Yeah,
where he's been removed for that, but I know that there's been other things that were in the works.
Correct.
That they just went, nope, we're stopping it.
Yeah.
We're stopping it.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're right. You know, I think he's going to not say go in hiding, but be recluse for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think this came way too late.
Three months
afterwards.
Right. He didn't really address what he was doing, like why it took 3 months, and did this feel well, coached to you? Did it feel like coached or scripted to you, even though he was eating?
I think he knew. I don't think so. I think he knew exactly what he was going to talk about.
Yeah. And the thing I did like about it, though, is that he took actual questions that people sent. Why did you do this?
Yeah.
Why did when she rolled her eyes, was that, you know?
Right.
I liked that part of it.
Yeah.
You know, because they're legitimate questions everybody, I think, has wanted wanted to ask him.
Yeah.
You know, I like the fact that the way he apologized or whatever to the whole event and how it did affect not just Chris, but his family, and Questlove, who won the Academy Award, mm-hmm. you know, how it screwed up his moment and everything and
yeah.
so forth.
Yeah.
You know, and so I admire him for that, but I think it's like kind of like you said, it's kind of done because that is the last thing we're going to be remembered. He's going to be remembered for, you know, it's like, and even I noticed I stopped watching like Fresh Prince or if Men in Black are on, I won't watch it now.
It changes the way you look at his
yeah.
persona, his characters. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's,
you know, and there was something I found recently, I guess about 10 years ago or so, he hit a reporter.
Oh,
it was like, I think like a Russian reporter or whatever. And he was trying to ask him a question or whatever. And at first it seemed like, okay. And he gave the reporter a hug. But of course, Russian culture, or whatever, sometimes they do the kiss on each cheek or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know. And that's what he was doing to Will. And Will took offense to that, pushed him off, and then slapped him.
Oh, my gosh.
Almost like a punch, like, what's wrong with you kind of a thing or whatever, you know. And I'm going, wow, this was... And it didn't blow up as big, of course, as this did.
Right. Because this is two stars, not a unknown Russian reporter.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, but, you know, it's amazing that, wait a minute, okay, so this behavior has happened before then.
And no consequence came out of that one.
No. Now, right. David Letterman, though, did talk about it. And Will Smith talked about it, too.
Mm.
And everything, but
I have that here with that slap, or with the reporter anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh my God!
Yeah, he backslapped
him.
Backslapped him.
Yeah.
And he was pulling away, and then threw in that little slap
as he's walking away.
Like he said, what's wrong with you, and pushed him, and then...
It's like, dude, if you're in Europe or whatever, there's a lot of people that do that double kiss on each cheek.
Yeah.
And Will Smith should know those kind of cultures, because he's traveled the freaking world, you dumbass.
Yeah, I mean, make a joke back. Like, I thought, you know, his persona was always, like, loose and comedic and witty and not particularly violent, even though
right.
he's been in action movies. But to me, I felt like the Chris Rock moment, too, could have just been, like, holler back a joke back at him, you know, like heckle Chris Rock back, but don't go up there and be violent, you know. But
yeah.
you know, he obviously lost
his
cool, you know.
Yeah.
His yeah,
yeah. It's interesting. So we'll post it up too. I'm sure you know you guys will, you know. Tell us what you think about it. We'll post it up. Tell us what you think, you know, on the whole thing or whatever. I see a little bit of remorse on it. I think he knows how big it screwed things up and everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and just we'll see what happens, you know, from this point forward. But I think the apology is too little, too late, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it really is. He should have done it within the week afterwards, you know,
right?
And done a big announcement. Not the stupid tweet that he did or whatever.
I think this was just too produced.
Mm-hmm.
Well, different camera angles. Different. There was mm-hmm. obvious product placement on the set.
Mm-hmm.
It was obviously a set. You know, this was not a comfortable environment that he was in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he just spent too much time thinking about the way that he was going to present himself instead of the material he was trying to just give out to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think something live, like with an interviewer that wouldn't.
Well, like Chris Rock has really only done stuff on his stand-up.
Right.
Is how he's really talked about this and dealt with this. And mm-hmm. that it's very intimate. It's with the show. It's with the people that are paying to see him. It's with his fans. This was for viral clicks,
mm-hmm.
for people like us mm-hmm. who will talk about,
about,
you know, just like topics and things mm-hmm. that come up. And it just gets his name back out there.
Yeah, because we need
I'm
listeners.
Interested to see most what happens with his slavery film that they just finished production on.
Oh, that's right.
Is he starring in that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, they said it's supposed to be better.
It was supposed to be like this and like Will Smith's pinnacle.
Really?
Is what
and
this
I'll,
film is supposed to be.
I'll do what he did with The King of Kings or whatever film it was
sure,
about
sure,
with
sure.
the tennis thing.
Yeah, King Richard.
Yeah, King Richard.
Interesting. That maybe that's also unstoppable now. Like, it's just got to come out.
Well, it's already finished at production.
Right.
So it was in post.
Right.
So I don't know where it is at this point.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I mean, that's already a moving train. I'm curious. Yeah.
That'll be a good double feature with the Flash movie where both stars won't be able to attend.
Well, and then we could throw Amber Heard in there. We
Amber
could
Heard,
do
yeah.
there you go.
Have a band
come on
film
down.
Festival.
I know.
They can't attend.
Abuse of stars and their excuses.
Abuses and excuses.
There you go.
It's a new segment, guys.
Sorry, Will Smith and Amber Heard. Come on down. Who slaps hurts the most?
Hosted by Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it'd have to be Charlie Sheen.
Oh, we'll get him.
Oh, yeah.
Baldwin. Alec Baldwin will be there.
Alec Baldwin should be arrested.
Yeah. That's a whole different subject. How much time do we got left, sweetie?
4 minutes.
4 minutes left. All right, real quick. You know what? Let's go through this real quick. Stars, talking about how much they do make or whatever.
Yeah, like when a sitcom goes into syndication, or they used to say it was 100 episodes that would get you into syndication. We're talking about what stars make off of the reruns of their former hit shows.
Right. And sometimes if your contract's good,
mm-hmm.
you do it right, you get a good agent.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Fingers crossed.
I'm seeing these numbers, partner. That's what you need.
That's what I need.
It's
oh
a damn
gosh.
Good agent and a good sitcom.
And a hit sitcom.
You need three seasons, at least three seasons.
Right?
And that's it.
Right?
I've got it for you. I need a writer.
All right.
There you go.
Let's talk.
There you go. I like that. I like that.
So there's some big names and some big numbers up here. The first one that comes to mind up here at the top, Jerry Seinfeld. I just finished rewatching Seinfeld. Such a good show. $110 million each year.
That's what he makes.
Off of Seinfeld.
Off of Seinfeld.
That's why he's pretty much done nothing.
He doesn't need to.
He did the B movie, and then he's cool. He buys some cars and drives around with his friends.
Yeah.
In his cars, getting coffee.
Yeah, with Jay Leno.
The dude is, how does it made?
He doesn't need to ever work again. This one is not a surprise, though, but considering how long it's been, though,
mm-hmm.
but Kelsey Grammer, we all know from Cheers,
mm-hmm.
then went off and did a spinoff called Frasier.
Mm-hmm.
So his net worth right now is approximately about $60 million. He made $1.6 million per episode in the filming of Cheers and Frasier. $1.6 per episode.
Per episode.
All right. He continues to make more than $13 million a year in syndication.
Great guy. Great voice.
Yeah.
Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah.
And speaking of
Cheers,
Ted Danson's on the list, of course. George Costanza always wanted that Ted Danson money on Seinfeld. And that Ted Danson money was over $450,000 per episode of the classic show Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
And he Ted continues to make $5 million each year. He seems to have a new sitcom all the time.
Well, then he also went to NCIS or CSI. Now he's going to get residuals from that one.
Becker, he was the grumpy guy.
Right.
I like that one.
The Good Place.
And then now he's doing, was it the one where he's the mayor?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Mayor.
I mean, he has shows.
So, I mean, you take... Oh, I love this theme song.
Yeah.
World today takes everything you've got.
Okay.
Taking a break from all your worries. All right.
I've been there. Have you been?
Yes. The Bull and Finch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I got a picture of me. I think I'm like, what, 16, 17 or whatever, maybe? I don't remember. In front of the Bull and Finch, where it says Cheers.
Oh, nice. You know, we got to do a show one time on just theme songs, like classic TV show theme songs, because, you know, there's a lot of good theme songs out there.
All right.
So
challenge next week, you and I.
Okay.
Next week. I have all of the TV theme things. Or whatever.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of good ones.
From our generation,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
listen
to
okay.
him.
Okay. Right. So Ted Danson, he's doing well. $5 million just from Cheers alone.
Yeah.
I want to run through these next three real quick, and then you can do the last three.
Sure.
Jim Parsons from The Big Bang Theory earns an extra $10 million a year.
Oh, boy.
From The Big Bang Theory.
Yep.
George Clooney, who came on ER.
Mm-hmm.
It's been years since he's done ER.
Yep.
Okay. He's done all these wonderful films, you know,
mm-hmm.
both dramatic, comedy, Ocean's
mm-hmm.
11 and all that crap or whatever. He doesn't really need to... He still makes $13 million a year in residuals ER.
That's surprising.
It also made his career.
Oh, yeah.
He almost quit acting, apparently.
Yeah, he was on the Facts of Life.
Don't forget, Facts of Life was his start, though. Okay, and this one, they played it so smart, though. But the whole cast of Friends got together, of course. They asked for the raises. They got the raises. And then when they wanted more, they got more and everything. To now to the point where the show brings in residuals, $1 billion a year, each year. So, and because of that, all six of the stars receive 2% of that annual income, which is $20 million a year.
That's bonkers. Wow.
Dude, I'm telling you, sitcom,
wow,
brother.
Right? All okay. right.
I got a new thing for you.
Yeah.
We're going to put a bunch of people together and call it acquaintances.
Okay. Six less beautiful, less charming friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And I'll play the fat musician.
They just small talk.
Yeah. They just small talk or whatever.
We drink you tea.
Drink tea somewhere. Yeah. And not at a coffee shop, but maybe, you know, like at a donut place.
Yeah. And the opening credits, we just play like we turn on a hose and spray each other with water with a garden hose.
There you go.
And that's pretty much it.
There you go.
Nice. All right, this next one, I'm not too familiar. I never saw his show, but Ray Romano didn't do so bad for himself.
Everybody loves Ray. It's really good.
$18 million a year for Ray Romano. Ed O'Neill. I am a fan of Ed O'Neill. Loved Married with Children. Loved Modern Family. And I have an autographed picture of him.
Do you really?
In my home. One of my few autographs that I have is from Ed O'Neill.
Very cool.
Yeah. And very nice man. Very private man. $10 million a year for reruns of Married with Children. And of course, he'll have more coming when Modern Family,
Modern Family comes out.
On. Yeah. And then, of course, the great, my favorite summer school teacher, Mark Harmon. He gets $525,000 per episode as an actor. And he's also a producer, so he can reach upwards of $700,000, his contract says.
Jesus.
Making up to $90 million in his reruns of CSI or NCIS. I confuse those
letters. Yeah, and then he's a producer on the New Orleans one also.
Boy, oh boy.
So he gets it from that. And
he's always slapping people, but that's in character. He's always like.
Real quick, though, this is not surprising, but we always hear about sometimes some actors who don't get anything.
Wow, bad agents.
Bad agents, bad whatever. And so real quick, Patrick Stewart, who stars, you know, Picard, doesn't get anything. Michael J. Fox from Family Ties doesn't make a dime on reruns.
He doesn't get anything from, really. And I'm surprised from The Next Generation.
Yeah. And that's exactly.
That's obvious. That's like clearly one of their most popular.
This one makes sense because I did hear about this from older TV shows, but like the whole cast of The Brady Bunch does not make a dime off of any of the reruns. Yeah. This one surprised me. Carol Burnett.
I wonder if it's a time period of these.
I think so is what it is. But and here's a little bit more of a modern one, kind of along with Michael J. Fox. But Fred Savage from The Wonder Years also does not make a dime.
Yeah, but does he off of Boy Meets World?
Was he involved with that? Or
no,
was
that's his brother.
Oh, that was his brother.
That was his brother. So his brother had a better agent than Fred did. So yeah, Fred. So that's what tells you, you know, hey. You got to go with the times,
right?
All righty. So there you go, guys. So that's what some of the stars are making and everything. And so go out and get yourself a hit sitcom.
I'm gonna do that.
Yeah, dude. I'm telling you. I can be like the showrunner.
All right.
I don't know what the showrunner does, but I can be a showrunner.
You can run.
I know.
So, all right. Well, I think that is going to wrap it up for us. Oh, I love this song though. Too good.
Good show.
Yeah, it was fun. Oh, God, I love talking to Paul, too, though. So thank you, Paul, buddy. Show's website is yourweeklydose.com. Facebook page, Your Weekly Dose. Twitter and Instagram is at Your Weekly Dose 1.
Please check out supportourstory.com/free lunch. That's supportourstory.com/free lunch. Would love for you to check it out and let me know what you think.
Yeah, and donate whatever you guys can. Just remember, you won't get a free lunch when you buy free lunch or send your donation to free lunch, but... You might get lunch, though. That's what we should do with you. Do a contest.
Uh-huh.
People donate.
Uh-huh.
Biggest donation gets lunch with you.
I will do that.
They get a free lunch on us.
Yeah?
With you.
I would love that.
That would be kind of cool.
If they're in Indiana, I don't know if I can make it there.
We can Zoom.
We can meet like in Colorado or something.
Well, we can Zoom from okay. from one Denny's to the next Denny's.
All right.
You know, but that's what we can do.
All right.
I like it. All right. Casey, your accolades are?
I'm still out of Facebook jail.
Yay!
I know. It's been a good while. This has been like one of the longest stints I've been off Facebook, but I've also not been on social media very much. Been very busy lately, right. So I feel like those go hand in hand, but it's Casey N. Summers on Facebook. Catch me there.
Yeah, please do, because she is sexy.
With those like maybe 5 photos that I've posted in the last like year.
10 years. Yeah. But I'm telling you, she's still sexy in those photos, though. That red hair, baby. All right, guys. Also, don't forget to listen to us on Delmarva Talk Radio at 7 a.m. Wednesday through Friday mornings, and also on our favorite, Lime City Radio, at noon Wednesday through Fridays. And, of course, if you enjoyed the show, don't forget to tell your friends about us, because, damn it, we can't grow this podcast without you guys. So help spread the word about the show. Tell your friends, tell your relatives, tell your neighbors, tell everybody you can, because, damn it, we dare you to. All right, until next week, guys, be good to each other, be safe, take care, have a good one.
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.